Hello and a very good evening to you listening to Nationwide with me, Sunny Martin. Coming up this evening, we will be looking at the outcome of the recently conducted research on gender analysis on political, social and economic impact of COVID-19 on women and girls in South Sudan. And this was conducted by the Institute of Social Policy and Research. And joining me this evening to discuss more about this, I am joined by two guests here, the Chief Executive Officer for Institute of Social Policy and Researcher James Boboya will be here with me in the studio throughout the program. Caroline Kibos, Coordinator for South Sudan Civil Society Forum. And later on, our lines will be open to you where you can call us on 092-091-206-2079 or 091-206-2950. Those are all our lines, and we are looking at a research that has been conducted on gender analysis on political, social and economic impact of COVID-19 on women and girls in the country. That's a short form of that. So that's what we are going to be looking at basically this evening. And joining me, like I said, is James Boboya. Good evening and welcome to Nationwide program.
Thank you very much.
And then also Caroline Kibos, the coordinator for South Sudan Civil Society Forum. Welcome once again.
Thank you so much, Sunny.
Okay, James, let's begin with you. First of all, like I said, can you give us a background of this study that was conducted by your group? Why?
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. As many people in South Sudan know that the Institute of Social Policy Research is a deeply rooted institutions that are working to produce policy-related issues and research that can inform programming and decision-making in South Sudan. And a series of some of the policy documents that we produce is the gender analysis on political, social, and economic impact of COVID-19 on girls and women is one of the policy that has been articulated by the institute. And the study is actually brought out a lot of compelling findings because we looked at how responsive has been the government in terms of responding to some of those issues that are impacting women and girls when it comes to COVID-19, and then also the issues to do with the support that have been provided by either government or partners. So when the COVID-19 came to South Sudan, most of the partners started to adjust to begin doing programming on COVID-19, and then government trying to spend a lot of energy on forming up the National Task Force on COVID-19. Mm-hmm. But then there's never been any thinking about how do we think about gender in relation to the response and decision-making relating to COVID-19. And one of the things that we found out is that throughout the study, women and girls have never been taken seriously in terms of either political impact or economic impact or social impact. And that is hugely a problem throughout in regard to the government and also in regard to the NGOs. NGOs have done interventions related to social well-being of girls and women. For example, that relates to education for girls and something like that, but it has not been really something that informs policy or informs future practices as per se.
Okay.
We have evidence, for example, just to summarize in 1 minute, that because of the impact of COVID-19, we have huge amount of women that have been raped. We have gender-based violence have gone up significantly. We have the divorce cases have gone up. We have madness of women and girls in many parts of South Sudan going up. Social services have been poorly delivered to women and girls. We have sexual exploitation because people who don't have money and because of poverty, women are able to offer themselves to get economic gain. We have issues to do with the loss of family businesses. Many people lost their business because of lockdown. And then the issues to do with the stress and trauma are some of the key issues that I can highlight here.
Okay. We shall be coming back to you later on. Yes, Kibos has the coordinator for the South Sudan Civil Society Forum. What was your role here in this study?
Well, ISPR is part of the forum. To know, the South Sudan Civil Society Forum is a coalition of around 200 organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So ISPR falls under the forum. So
yeah,
it's a joint thing.
Correct.
Yes.
So now we are hearing from what he is talking about that during this study, they have discovered that so many women have been divorced, and also there has been a lot of stress. Some women have gone mad. So from your analysis, what should be the cause of all this?
You know, before COVID-19, we already had issues, right? But these issues, the COVID-19 came, and then it accelerated, or it increased on the rates of these issues.
Yeah.
So, for example, of course, before COVID-19, we had these high cases of gender-based violence. But with COVID-19, you get that it has affected people in such a way that income was not coming. The lockdown was preventing people from doing their businesses as normal. So you see some people in their homes when there is no money, it's just, yeah, you, there is a way you feel when there is no money.
Turns the anger on the
exactly,
woman.
Exactly. And then for the girls, you find that during the normal days, they would go to school, but then COVID-19 came and schools were locked. So you find girls at home and they are redundant, doing nothing. And then you're sitting at home where there is no food and anything. You decide to also go and fend for yourself mainly. Then you get exploited by these big rich men who promise you heaven and earth. Mm-hmm. And then they end up not giving you whatever they promised you.
Yes, and James, in your opening statement, you said that during this COVID-19, over 1 year now, many women and girls have been left outside. They're not being taken seriously during this COVID-19. As per your study, what are the causes?
I mean, the cause is that, for example, when you look at the national government, they have made decisions on behalf of women without consulting women. So women have not been brought as a, you know, to reflect their own voices into other programming or into decision making or into making decisions within the structures. We have evidence that suggests that because of it took long for the government to be formed.
Yeah.
So there were no structures that are responsive to women concerns, both at national level and also at local level. And even those structures that were formed after all, those structures are men-driven. There are no women representatives in most of the structures. The only structure that sort of helped in playing in addressing women and girls' issues is the Minister of Gender and Social Welfare. But the rest of other departments, we have the Protection Department within the police that could have addressed gender-based related issues. We have the judicial processes that are more men-driven. We have the social related issues to do with education. So most decisions are men-made decisions, and women are sort of thrown out from that processes. And even the NGOs that are supposed to help in the process, they never use their research and advocacy to influence government decisions so that they're able to properly and very effectively be able to address some of the women-related issues, and especially the economic status of women given the lockdown and the impact of COVID-19 in general.
Okay, how long and where did you conduct this study from?
This study took like 3 months, and it's a study that brought voices of women both within civil society, within the academia, and within the general population all over South Sudan. So we sort of target some of the urban areas in South Sudan, and we sort of interview women and girls and some of the men in terms of what's going on as far as the impact politically, social, and economically on women and girls.
Okay, and before we hear from Caroline, tell us the purpose of this study. What compelled you to come up with this study?
Basically, this study is to help us to raise some of those issues to the forums that are existing, such as Mirai FM, and also for civil society to capitalize on evidence, because our job is to generate the evidence. And then our forum, as House of Civil Society, spearheaded by Caroline, will take it up with the various civil society so they can do lobbying and advocacy to make sure that some of the things that have been found out, like raping, like the rest of issues with GVV and economic issues, are sort of brought up to the government attention so that government can also play a role to be able to begin addressing them with the relevant partners in South Sudan.
Yes, Caroline, take it from there. After finding these damning report from the issue of raping, divorce, and so many stress during this COVID-19, businesses have literally come to a close or to a standstill. People can't move from one place to another, and we have so many perpetrators outside there who are still not held to account for all what they have done. What would you like to be done with these findings?
Well, as you said, first of all, these findings are supposed to inform advocacy. We are supposed to use these findings to advocate for better services, to advocate for access to justice to these women who have been abused in one way or the other, to also advocate the government and the other responsible NGOs to prioritize certain areas, to prioritize giving support to women, because obviously we know that women and girls are the vulnerable people. So this study is supposed to inform policy, it's supposed to inform advocacy towards how the women and girls should be supported based on their needs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, James, what is the situation of COVID-19 like in the country?
The situation of COVID-19 is actually worse, because in part of the study, it suggested that most women really were impacted because they had to take care of their own husbands that are affected by COVID-19, because there was no quarantine center, right? So women, then they spent 14 days of taking care of their own husbands, taking care of uncles, and in that, they lost livelihood. So COVID-19 is real, and it's actually huge, but in terms of government taking up efforts in a very systematic, transparent, and democratic way to sort of trace the balance between, for example, lockdown and the survival of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Because in South Sudan, we don't have formal economy. We have informal economy, and everybody seems to be having subsistence of business. So, and any impact that comes with that, the shock immediately impacts on women. We have seen women who are selling tea, women who are selling vegetables in town. Some of them lost their businesses. There's now at least a good news that most of the women now turning businesses into selling, lots of women are selling mangoes, because season for mangoes. But then what happens is, when mangoes are finished, women will go back into a very difficult survival. And I think this policy also informs us and the government that we have to begin thinking of what can we able to do for women and girls. We have a particular issues that came out in terms of, for example, in Rumbek. After the lockdown, the girls that used to be protected at school, now they're home, and they're pushed to the cattle camps, and they're forced to marry. So when schools are open, where shall South Sudan find girls to go back to school, right? Mm. Yeah, because there are a lot of pregnant girls, you know, teenage pregnancy, forced marriage, and you know, all these issues that nobody pays attention to.
And they push the girls actually for forced marriage, because now the parents do not have any source of livelihood, so they now turn back and see that, okay, there is this girl, let's sell her off so that we get money for
Caroline, taking about the issue of forcing girls to go and marry at that tender age, what is the social impact of COVID-19 on women and the girls in South Sudan, as per the study you conducted, what you have seen?
Well, mainly, if you were to look at the girls, we have a high rate of dropouts.
Mm.
Because I didn't want to call them dropouts, because it's the first kind of dropping out, because there is
willing.
No school. Leave alone, they're not willing to go to school. But schools have been closed, so you're forced to of course, come back home. Now you're at home and you're redundant, right?
Doing nothing.
There is nothing that you're doing. Now you're from here because your family needs money, you're sold out, right?
Yeah.
You get or even some of them are not actually, let's not push this thing to family. Some of them are not sold out, but some of them just because you know, sometimes idleness is bad. So you're idle and you look for things to do and you find these boys or these men who come and lie to you and boom, you're pregnant.
Mm.
When schools open, you cannot go back to school. So now we're going to have a bigger gap on the ratio of girls and boys going back to school.
When schools open.
So you might find in the class, you might find only 10 girls will appear in school because the rest of the girls are seated at home. Now this is going to, and the longer impact of it is bad, because now we are creating a society whereby now this girl, imagine she has dropped out of school, she has no other source of income or anything, she has no other way of educating herself, because you know our South Sudanese culture, when you get married, that's it. You're going to produce, and you forget about school.
Yeah.
So the longer time is, we are doing a recurring thing. The mother was not educated, she has been sitting at home, now her daughter is going to go through
and it will continue.
And it's going to continue. Then we'll have gaps in having women in other spaces, in political spaces, in other business spaces, just because of this thing that we're doing. So in the long run, it impacts us badly.
Okay. And then let's find out more from James. I know we shall be talking about your recommendation later on. Now, before we just go, I want to find out what do you think, Hesper, what you have seen now can be done to encourage these girls who are either pregnant or who have been married at that tender age to encourage them to go back to school?
I mean, one of the things they propose is that the girls' education needs to continue so that girls are given support to go to school. There's a process, a system called ALP, the Accelerated Learning Program, where international NGOs are coming in to pay school fees for these girls so that they continue to stay at school. And then you have to equate their, for example, when they pass well, then that certificate is used to, as equivalent to anybody who has gone through the formal education process.
Yeah.
So that these girls are able to access either secondary school or are able to access a university, for example.
Mm.
So that can be one program that the government needs to think about to make sure that girls are really continue to be empowered. There was a suggestion that perhaps adding 2 points for girls in any passing, right?
The affirmative
action. Affirmative action, right? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also issue that there must be a comprehensive study of the needs of girls and women to find out exactly what needs to be done in order for this to inform, for example, if there's a vocational training institution that needs to be created.
Yeah.
Because, for example, if you have two or three children, it will be very difficult for you to go through the formal education system. So probably we need to create a system that can build your quick skills and then you're able to go back to businesses.
James, let me
cut you short. I really want to disagree with people say it is going to be difficult for girls to continue, because I think this is still an old cultural thing that we are just insisting on.
Mm.
I do not see, if the will is there, I think they can still continue to go through formal education.
We have also seen, just in the recently concluded senior four papers, pregnant girls were allowed to sit.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I wanted to say. I want us to start right from our homes. If a girl is pregnant, that does not stop her from going to school. Let her continue to... We need to have these schools whereby we should also be considerate of some other factors.
Mm-hmm.
So we should also allow these pregnant people to study, because when you're pregnant, it doesn't mean that you stop.
Let me take you away from your researcher. From the conversation you have been having with people throughout the country, why is it very hard for a girl who is pregnant for the parents to allow her to go back to school? Why?
I mean, it goes back to what Carol just said, that our family structures are not supportive. Once you're pregnant, you're burdened. So you, for example, husbands are spending time to take care of your pregnancy, but you're also asking for demand to go to school. That's like an additional demand.
Mm. Yeah.
So the entry point will be, how do we educate even the husbands of these pregnant women to be able to allow their wives to go to school? That's number one. Number two, the families. We have evidence, of course, Caroline talked about, in terms of parents marrying off their own children, and once they're forced to marry, they're no longer the responsibility of those
parents. Yes, you're not expected to come back home.
And they're not even expected to go back to school. Because if you go back to school, you might have a new behavior that might end up you abandoning your marriage, something like that.
Okay. Now, we shall be looking later on at the scope of your study. But let us talk about, Caroline, the economic impact of COVID-19 on women, basically women in South Sudan. Apart from what we have heard from James, that women are doing small-scale business, and then women are also selling this. Most businesses came to a standstill. What else have this COVID-19 caused in terms of the economic impact on women and girls, basically, in this country? From the study?
From the study. You know, because women are the ones who are doing these small-scale businesses.
Yeah.
They're the ones, if you go to the market, they're the ones who are doing this small vending, selling tomatoes, selling vegetables. And we all know that these vegetables come from Uganda.
Yeah.
We all know that one.
Yeah. Mm.
So the vegetables come through the road, Nimule?
To Juba. And now we have a case.
And then we had this lockdown.
Yeah.
So that means, because if you've had a lockdown, that means things are not coming.
Yeah.
So
most of the regions were in lockdown for a very long time.
Exactly. So at that moment, the women were forced to now do their own subsistence farming, so that small thing that they farm, they can bring to the market.
Yeah.
But that's also, there was a gap there, because remember, we don't have tools. The women didn't have the right tools. They didn't have seeds that they can actually continue with this thing. So whatever they could produce would come in small scale.
Mm.
So it was not actually bringing for them the required money that they wanted. Then also, when now we relaxed the curfew a bit, the cargo trucks kept coming, right? But now the problem with the cargo is when it enters, it delays in clearance.
Yeah.
And remember, these goods like tomatoes, those are perishables. Yeah. You cannot keep them for long. So by the time this woman goes and gets her tomatoes or her vegetables from the cargo, most of it has gone bad.
Yeah.
This is also a loss on her side. Then because the cargo was also delayed and process this security clearance and blah, 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 you find that she has to pay extra for this cargo that was brought. Now, that extra she pays has to be reflected in the price that she's going to sell with her goods. Now, when the price is hiked, us, the consumers, we come and we complain and we do not want to buy, right? Mm-hmm. A few of the people, and at that time, not everyone could afford to buy those things. So a few of the people would buy. So you see, it still brings back losses. And imagine all these things were coupled with depreciation in pounds against the dollar. So all these factors contribute in that when prices are increased, we still, as consumers, we complain that these people are just being expensive, but we are not putting in mind that this lady has
the challenges they are going through.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm.
And then you also find the insecurity on the roads. So because the roads are not safe, the people who manage to bring goods from the border to this side also charge them higher because of
the
risks.
They have to meet all the, because we are told there are a lot of multiple checkpoints along the Jubanimale Road.
And some of these women actually come with these trucks, and along the road, that's when some of them actually get raped and all these things. So you see, when they manage to reach this side, they have to, at least they have to put this thing on the price that they have to give you. So in the end, you find that the prices are hiked and the consumers are not willing to pay for this for these prices. So it's still the woman that is being at the then if we are to go up a bit from there again, but it's still on the economic beat, is you find that even the NGOs, the international NGOs, they cut their funding to organizations. Now, because they wanted to have some money for COVID programming.
Yeah.
So with that cutting of funds, we find that it affects some of the organizations, especially the women organizations, because now some of these women organizations were doing skill building for women, where you find women doing
But beads. Because of the global pandemic, they could not get the funding again from donors.
Exactly, because the donors have cut off this. Mm. So you were making some other women redundant. Okay, with this came a bit of a blessing, because some of these women were required to do these face masks.
Yeah.
And then these ones who knew how to make soap and liquid soap and all these things. But you see, that is compared to the larger group of the women, you find that that's just only a small number of women that were engaged, and leaving out the bigger population. And besides, these things were also only concentrated at the urban areas. You find that the rural women were not actually catered for.
How was life during those hard days last year, and how is life for them now, these women at the rural areas? Because I think most of the support are focused in Juba and some
capitals. Actually, most of the support is focused on the capitals of these states.
Yeah.
Then you find that the rural women are really so behind, and they are lagging. And then you even if you wanted to help them, you find that there are challenges. Inaccessibility is one of it. How do you reach to them? The roads are bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You get insecurity on the way.
These intercommunal classes.
Exactly. So you find that this is still a challenge up to now.
Yes. And I think also one of the things that I need to highlight very briefly is we have the locusts that came in, we have the flooding that came in, and the COVID-19.
Like, for example, in Jungle Estate.
Yes. So you see women that are impacted by COVID-19, and then the flooding came, and then they're displaced. They lost livelihood.
Yeah.
You see? So something like that. We have evidence in WOW, where number of men decided to marry multiple wives as a livelihood strategy, where I go to wife number one, if there's no food, I can go to the next wife, I can get food.
Okay.
So survival way of living in...
Now tell us the scope of the study.
Yeah, the scope of study, of course, was a national by its scope.
Mm.
And basically, it's just to inform policy in terms of asking a range of questions to do with, for example, the impact on women and girls. We ask questions to do with the government response in terms of this, and we also ask about the partner's response.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ask what could be the best way that the women and girls can be brought out of this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very, very important, is because, as Carolyn said, if we don't pay attention to girls and women, we will have a huge problem in the future. We have to think about the girls and women in the urban areas and the girls and women in the rural areas. And we need to begin thinking about what voices of women needs to be captured in terms of the economic, political, and social well-being.
So what are the key findings, generally?
I mean, the key findings are the ones I just highlighted in the very beginning, in terms of women, economic power is diminishing. Women, political power is diminishing. Government is not willing to allow women to be in the political structures so that women can work, fight on the rights of other women. We have women who are in the politics who are not interested to allow other women even to come into politics so that they increase their voice, right? So the prophetic voice of women is diminishing because other women are anti, So then the other issue that I want to highlight is that the funding for women-led organizations have never been prioritized by international donors so that they could have continued to advocate outside politics on behalf of these women that are there.
Why?
Because most of money have been taken for COVID-19 and the donors did not think that these issues are coming up and therefore we need to respond. The other issues to do with the government policy of lockdown does not require women to congregate. So if there are a opportunity of capacity building, you cannot bring women to a classroom and teach them new skills so they can be able to navigate the COVID-19. Yeah. You see what I mean? For example, like the soap making, if we would have been allowed by, or the government were taking it seriously, and the international community comes and support partners, they would have begun coming up with new skills that would have helped women to come out from the shocks of COVID-19 in terms of how can they do other economic-related activities that could have make them survive. How can they be able to survive in the communities, right? How can they address the gender-based violence and allow women to continue, surviving in some of the issues like maybe agriculture or something like that? And this has not been adequately prioritized.
But basically also, the government did not have any plan.
Yes.
Like totally, they didn't have any plan on how they can go with the COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we can see that the Ministry of Gender at some point distributed face masks and some food was distributed. But what was the criteria, if we were to come back, what was the criteria of distribution? Because if you do not have a criteria, you might find, I will go there like 3 times, how would you know it is the same me?
Yeah.
So there's actually no clear plan that the government came up with to counter this issue of COVID-19. And with regard to also the issue of maybe the rising GBV and blah, blah, you could see that the police were trying to document cases. But still there was some vacuum there because there was a lot of reluctance in that documentation. They would not actually follow up with the cases, or they just did it. I think it's just because it's a job, and then you just do it because you feel like, but you don't do it the way you should do it.
Yeah.
And then even when you're reporting cases, you would find that there are delays from the police in reaching where that case happened. So the evidence can actually get lost very fast. You know, getting evidence of GBVs, it can be lost so fast.
Yeah, yeah.
So you find that you call police and they take long. You take 3 hours to reach there. How would you get the perpetrator, or if any evidence was there that you would get? And the issue they keep on telling us is that there are no means of transport for them to reach. But you find that if it's any other thing, you find
they respond very fast.
They respond very fast. So you see there is a bit of reluctance from this side of the government. And from the side of the NGOs, yes, you see that some international NGOs have supported some of the local NGOs in making sure that they do awareness on these issues, and then they also get some of the services. But you find that also these people, they don't want to do other things just beyond awareness. So you find that, yes, there are some organizations that document these cases and profile these cases of these GBV cases. But after that, what next? Because it should not only end in documentation. There needs to be some prosecution of the perpetrators. But you find that these small NGOs cannot also take the case forward because you cannot afford lawyers to go and do these things. You know, you have to pay lawyers.
Yeah.
You cannot always depend on pro bono services because at some point as people will want money.
Yeah.
So there is also a gap there. If only the government and these international NGOs can also support some of the NGOs in making sure that these cases are actually
correct. So before our lines are open, James, in your study, what are the most affected states in terms of GBV, forced marriages of these underage girls, early pregnancies, and all these kind of factors you have mentioned earlier on?
We have Jonglei, Jongola has been impacted in terms of multiple shocks like the flooding and the COVID-19. And lots of things happened there that the situation is not properly reported. We have Lake State hugely impacted. Even it has been made worse with the intercommunal conflict and the cattle riding and the rest of the things. We have in the Upper Nile region a lot of multiple shock, including flooding, the drought, and the rest that happens there. And the worst thing is that those areas are not exposed to radios so that they can continue to receive awareness raising, right?
Yeah.
And the cultures of those areas are completely more difficult to sort of reckon with. In the Equatorial region, it has been fairly okay, but in the areas of Yei, Morobu, Lanya, Kajukeji, that has also been one of the greatest area that has happened with the impact of GALS and the COVID-19 also in relation to that. And then in Eastern Equatoria, it's also heavily impacted, but of course it's also those areas that have characteristics. For example, in Kapoita. Kapoita is one of the hugely impacted area when it comes to some of those issues.
Yeah.
But then that is to do with the economic and social other things. But if when it comes to education, most of the urban education had also been impacted. And I think generally when you speak when you talk about women and girls selling themselves to get money, majority of the cases happen in urban areas where there's interaction of girls and women with business people and NGO workers and people who have economic capacity to use the economic capacity to influence women to be submissive into doing some of those unethical related issues.
Okay.
But even in the rural areas it happens.
Yeah.
Only
yeah.
that the women don't feel that they're being exploited in the rural. It's part of it. Part of life.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have one case just quickly.
Yeah.
We ask a question when you talk about rape. How does rape happen? And we ask them, when you are in your bed, are you forced by men to have sex? Majority of women say yes. So we discover that there's also sex. I mean, there's rape within marriage.
Marital rape.
And then there's rape everywhere.
Okay.
When you're not
but
married.
But you know, in South Sudan, you cannot say marital rape because it's not yeah. part of our crime.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can call us right now on 0912062079 or 0912062950 and ask your question to my guest here in the studio. I have James Boboya, who is the Chief Executive Officer, Institute of Social Policy and Research. We have Caroline Kibos, Coordinator of South Sudan Civil Society Forum, and we are discussing about the study they have conducted in the country that lasted for 3 months, and they are outlining some of their findings. And this is in regard to the impact of COVID-19 around women and girls in the country. You can call us and be part of our conversation right here with me, Sani Martin. Hello, Redimire. Hello. Yes, the number once again is 0912062079 or 0912062950. Hello, Redimire.
Hello.
Yes, your name?
Yes, Alexander from Bor.
Okay, Alexander from Bor. Go ahead, Alexander.
Only my small question goes to the two officers. Why they are saying that other women they feel are reluctant in motivating other ladies, women,
the politicians,
Why?
Okay.
Why they are doing that kind of thing?
All right.
Is it selfishness, or they have something behind it?
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Alexander from Bor. Yes, James, you earlier on mentioned that those women who are already in the political elites, who are women in this country, they don't want to, like, for example, pull up these women who are trying to also make life meet. What is the problem?
I mean, one thing that we found from our analysis was that some women who are in politics for many years, they feel comfortable to continue dominating. So it's about dominance, it's about, enjoying the power.
Okay.
By recruiting many women to politics, they are actually recruiting competition.
Their seat feels threatened.
Yes. That's what I, from the analysis. But of course, Carol, being an expert in some of the legal issues. Carol,
This is actually not a legal issue. This is just, I think it's self-interest. Mm. They are trying to protect their interests. So they think bringing these other ladies on board, they will lose it, because if you've accumulated all these things, and then they also have this sense of entitlement. We've been through the bush, we were there, and blah blah. So you small people, you just woke up today, and now
you wait for your time.
Yeah. Yes, that's what they keep saying. Mm. But I actually think this is a very wrong mindset, because the more we are, the better we can bargain.
Yeah.
But that's not what they're looking at. Mm. They don't look at it from that perspective. So they only just think about themselves
but
and
these
their
are,
interests.
In some events, these are the same women who keep advocating for the 35% affirmative action. The same women.
You know, the irony is, some of them talk to us about 35%, but behind, in certain meetings when 35% is being discussed, they do not say anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's find out more from our callers. Hello, Redimire. Hello.
San Martin, good evening.
Good evening to you.
You are connecting to Mawia Yol in IMRI.
Okay, Mawia, go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the discussions, and also I thank the guests also. They really raised up a very interesting comments.
Mm.
Are you with me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay. I think just mine is a little bit common.
Mm.
You know, a country always need a different way of creating inclusive, integrated policy from a variety of authority on the ground.
Mm.
Let's say one example, the national government.
Yeah.
Should be the number one in all this process. And I, by the way, I agree with my sister there in the studio, and also my brother. They raised a very interesting point that the government should be the number one when it comes to the issues concern about the gender-based violence on how it can be stopped. I will definitely focus on education. You know, creating a society that can move forward in a inclusive way where each of every groups is welcomed, and also their existence in such a community is also recognized. A country should focus on education. If you take a close look to our community right now, especially the rural community, there are some community which completely, let me say, marginalize it indirectly.
Okay.
Also, the government will not recognize, but they are completely cut off from any sort of development, from any sort of bringing them together, creating a capacity where they can manage their own internal issues that always dividing them. So something to do with the gender-based violence on how it can stop,
should be
where the women and the young girls can be given access to
education.
To leave.
Thank you.
National government should focus on education.
All right. Thank you
so
much.
When you educated them, they will know.
All right.
Right, and they will complain.
Thank you so much. Maria from Juba here. Hello? Hello? Hello. Good evening.
Good evening, 101.
Yes, your name?
Madding from Lake State.
Okay, Madding from Lake State. Go ahead.
Yeah, pleasure to have James and Madam Clarine.
Yeah.
It has been a good topic today that you have brought up.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think these issues are related to the gender-based violence. Supposed to be discussed offline, mostly to reach the people in the rural areas.
Yeah.
Like majority of these, they don't even attend the workshop, the seminars, and the other issues related to the gender awareness.
Yeah.
As we have a lady as a coordinator inside Maria, how should they reach the rural women?
Yes, we seem to be having a network problem with your line and Rumbek, but we got the point. How can they reach the rural women in order to empower them to know their rights so that they can fit and build this country? Yes, Caroline.
Well, as I explained earlier on, it's actually hard to reach some of these areas because of the insecurity and the inaccessibility.
Yeah.
But we are trying our best. We've had programs whereby we have workshops in the states, in the different locations in different states. But, you know, South Sudan is so big, and we still acknowledge that still so much needs to be done because we have not, even as we feel, we have not reached a good coverage, because if I go and I only go to Yei, I cannot claim to see that I have done something for the Central Equatoria, because Yei is just a small...
Yeah, a county.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we still have more to do, but we've actually taken that into consideration to reach people from the rural areas. Yes.
Maria raised the point of prioritizing these things through education.
I think it's a very important point, and it should actually, I don't know what Bobo thinks, but I think if the Ministry of Education can actually have some syllabus, it can review its syllabus.
Do you think it's the right time now to begin a discussion around education, how to include the people of Ministry of Education?
No, I don't think. I don't think this is the right time, but me, it's just my personal suggestion that at least for a wider and for better understanding, we should, you know, it's good to start these things from the young people.
Yeah.
You know, because these other ones are going to, they have already bent, right?
They are retiring.
So, yes, so we should start from these young people so that they grow up with good values and they know things to do with GBV and all these things. But at this age right now, I think we still have a lot of pressing priorities that I think Ministry of Education will actually not even give us audience.
Yeah, because they have even a lot in their entry. So, Boboya, tell us some of your recommendations during this study. What are the recommendations? And Caroline will tell us which line ministries, which partners are you going to hand over these studies to them, so that at least they can also include it in their policy decision making.
Yeah, I mean, one of the issue is just what Caroline said. The government of South Sudan and the people of South Sudan needs to decide, this is the situation that is facing us. How do we get out of this situation? And we told the government that education is one key aspect. That means we have to be able to mainstream gender in education. We have to mainstream gender in our governance processes. We have to mainstream gender in our policies. We have to work with NGOs to begin mainstreaming gender, not in their human resource policies, but in their programming. And we have to create a program cycle, including building capacity of government, different government structures. Because when we talk about gender in South Sudan, we always think about gender in a way of the Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare. Gender is for everybody. So that conversation needs to continue. And we should be able to come up with a program. For example, we expect the government by now, having, if they listen to our policy paper, to begin having a conversation with the development partners on how would they want to start education and what will happen with the bulk of those women and girls that are married that are not likely to access education. What will happen with them? Because this is the future human resource. And then they have to look at the education, the funding for education, the funding for, I mean, startup money for women who want to do economic activities.
Yeah.
There is about seats. You can only provide seats. We have issues like in our paper that Juba City Council became like a lion that when you see a meat, he want to eat the meat with all the bone. So the way the city council is fighting the women
in the market,
in the market, through taxes, through pushing them out of their places and everything, and then embracing international or foreigners, that needs to stop. We need to find...
This is the one we are recommending.
Yes. So we need to find a way of how do we lift up those suffering women and organize them into groups and begin giving them training and then funding.
So this is one of the major issues women are facing here in Juba. They are being overtaxed, and some of them run out of business, and some of them can't even afford to rent places because getting rent in Juba here is also another problem.
Yeah, and then the other issue is to do with the dollarization, right?
Yeah.
Every rent needs to be in dollars, right?
And then pay people, 6 months.
You sell tomatoes in pounds, and you have to pay rent in dollars. This is not something that, if we have a government, the government needs to listen to some of these voices and then improve policies, practices, and legislation. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, Caroline, who are the partners, the line ministries, you have to hand over your recommendation to, so that they can also consider some of this? I know James have talked about Juba City Council.
Yes, I think we'll start with Ministry of Gender, since everyone in South Sudan thinks issues to do with women is supposed to be with gender.
Yeah,
that is just the thinking anyway. Yeah. But I think that's the first line ministry that we have to take to this. But I don't support that it ends there. I think it should be among all the ministries. We should also go to the states. The state level, actually, we start from the governor so that he knows what happens in his state.
Yeah.
We present to him this and he sees this.
All the governors
starting from here. So this thing has to go through national and even state level. And then for the other stakeholders, for the other partners we have, like the NGOs, the international NGOs, for example, Search for Common Grounds and in CARE International, because they've been supporting some of the national NGOs in giving funds for monitoring these GBV cases. We also have to share this with them so that they also increase their funding, and they also fund certain things like legal representation in courts to make sure some of these cases are actually prosecuted.
Okay. Yes, finally, James, so many studies and research have been conducted by different entities in the country. Why do you think yours is so unique this time, and will it have an impact?
Yes, 100%. We authored a paper, which we were here at the Mirai FM, condemning the practices of the National Task Force. And that pressure brought the dissolution of the first task force. I don't know if you remember.
Of COVID-19.
We pushed for the transparency. We authored a paper on the government transparency. We discovered that $92 million have been earmarked for COVID-19 in South Sudan. And we told the international partners that if the government of South Sudan do not want to open a bank account and use this bank account to use this money for combating COVID-19, let the international community give the money to the government. They did not do that. They only gave other items like face masks, manual money. And we also told that if the government officials are not careful in their things, they're going to lose the fight for COVID-19. Indeed, they lost the fight for COVID-19. So our work is based on experiences and the people's voices. And if the government and the international partner want to listen to us, some of these policy papers are the way to go. And it will inform their way of programming, the way of spending money to bail South Sudan from the crisis we're actually facing currently.
Okay, how do I access it if somebody wants to have access to the paper?
We are going to circulate this paper widely through our social forums. We're also going to put it online.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, James Boboya, the Chief Executive Officer for Institute of Social Policy and Research, plus Caroline Kibos, Coordinator for South Sudan Civil Society Forum. Thank you both for coming to our studio. We shall have more time to talk about more of your work. Thank you both for coming.
Thank you, Sunny. Very much.